JavaScript podcast, Hangout, whatever, after a long, a very, very long struggle with all sorts of issues to try to start this Hangout, we are finally going to start recording with our buddy from Latvia, Artur Sosins. Hello, Artur, how are you doing?
Hello. Well, this time we managed to do it a little bit earlier than in the PHP podcast, so we are getting better.
And we had all sorts of problems, but we also don't have no more patience to start talking about it because it is so many issues, including some problems with recording. But you are ready to talk about JavaScript, and that's what we are going to start to do first. The first topic that we are going to talk about is precisely about one interesting regarding performance of ECMAScript 6 implementations, or at least emulations, if you can call it so. So there is this article that talks about feature performance, and it shows the results of many tests, all sorts of tests, and it shows how it went in terms of performance with some transpilers and I don't know what are all these. I knew about Babel, this tracer. I don't know what is tracer. Do you know tracer, Artur?
No, but probably similar to Babel, emulating some kind of transpiling or something like that.
Yeah, ES5 binder is probably another transpiler, right? ES6, I don't know. It could be a reference implementation? No.
I think it is a native implementation that is only available in Firefox, but as we see from results, it's really, really slow compared to emulations. So it's probably a test version or something like that.
Yeah.
One thing that we should note is that under Node.js, there seems to be a Node version and IOJS version.
Yeah.
IOJS is the 2.31.
I see. So the 0.10 is the actual Node, and the 2.3 is the IOJS fork.
Yeah.
Well, so what is the big conclusion about all these charts?
It's the lot- Internet Explorer 12 performs quite okay.
Yeah.
Internet Explorer 12, is it meant Edge already, or was it the actual Internet Explorer 12 version?
Is there an Internet Explorer 12, or is Edge what they call
Edge?
I
think it's an Edge, yeah. That's why it's faster. They've never written it or something like that.
Yeah, I see. Well, anyway, I think this is just a beginning of something. There is still a long way to go. And apparently, they are no longer calling it ECMAScript 6 or 7 or whatever. They just bind them to numbers of the year. So there is ECMAScript 2015 and ECMAScript 2016 when it comes. And it is probably confusing because we know that ECMAScript 6 provides different features. So I don't know how they are going to clarify what is what. Anyway, moving on to the next topic. And this one is just a curiosity, a chart of projects that are in JavaScript projects that are in GitHub. They took the numbers of the forks and the stars, and they computed a ranking. I don't quite understand these numbers, because I don't know if these numbers are changes.
Yeah, it's probably I don't know. It seems so. because there are negative numbers also. But it's quite interesting to see that AngularJS is on the first place, while, for example, BackboneJS is only on the 10th place. That D3 visualization library is before Node.js. There is the IOJS, for example. I think we can search here also.
It's
not like that.
Well, I don't know. I thought jQuery probably would be the most popular.
And it's on the third, fourth place. But it's also combining lots of different plugins and stuff like that. So it's hard to tell. Interesting that the project I'm working on currently is actually on 978th place, which is kind of great. It's in top 1,000.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I'm committing to it quite often. And
That's why. So you've been committing a lot just to shit the stats.
No, but it's actually calculating from the stars and forks, so it's not related to commit. But still, that's interesting.
Yeah, is there so many people doing forks, and is it you, or is just you creating many forks?
yeah, that's me. Call me.
Yeah. It's like a project. How many other people are in the project?
Couple.
Besides you?
Couple of people, not like four maybe. Yeah. There are other contributors. Since it is an open source project, there are of course other contributors. So it has some trend, some tension.
Yeah. Well, okay, this is just a curiosity, probably not a very meaningful shard, because probably you find many top libraries that you don't use or know very well. So moving on to the next topic, on which we're going to start to talk about an API that is aimed to replace the traditional XML HTTP request library that we often call it AJAX. There is an article talking about here, and that there is also a specification going on, and basically the idea is to provide a clean implementation of a library that can perform HTTP requests
standardized, so
have
the same API in all browsers, because that's the most common problem with AJAX request, that you need to anticipate many different behaviors and options, and that's probably why many of us use jQuery, at least for the AJAX part.
Well, XML HTTP request has been standardized. It doesn't mean that everybody follows it. The problem is that there were different versions, and browsers do not want to change whatever they have and is not compatible with the other. So now we have a specification, and it's not done yet, but people can already start working on its implementations.
Yeah, and talking is that for like 2 more years or maybe even 5 years, you would have to use both fetch API and fallback to XML HTTP requests just in case.
Yeah, so now you have twice of the problems. So anyway, there is already somebody who that is working with this Fetch API and implemented a JSON path library that, or is it JSON, a new parse library, or is it a way to make it work with the non-blocking asynchronous resources of JSON?
I think it's not a library, just a way to use Fetch API to asynchronously load JSONs, because, well, that's what they do. They make asynchronous requests to read file and then parse it.
Yeah.
So I think it's a built-in function in Fetch API to process
JSON. Well, anyway, but this is something that is being specify. There is already people that already have jumped on it, and it is interesting. Okay, next topic, we are going to talk about something related with web components. Actually, this is an opinion article that was written by this guy, Christian Heilmann, and he was putting up a reflection on web components. Basically, it says are an endangered species. Well, I don't know if this is probably exaggerated. What I know personally that I have tried material design, polymer libraries, and was very disappointed with it because the promise was good, like having a library of web components that you could use, implement standard behaviors, and you could make the presentation somehow adapt to the underlying platform. And when I tried it, I realized it's Polymer is a bit messy because there are several versions, and the last version is not compatible with the previous versions. And whatever you built on previous versions will not work. And if you are going to look at the existing documentation, it is confusing because the documentation of the both versions coexist and you don't know what to do to make it work. But I think it was worse, at least in my opinion, because I was trying to use it in a Cordova project, and eventually it would also work on the web, the same code, because it's all JavaScript, is that, for instance, you have errors, at least something does not work, and it does not throw any errors. You have no clue why it is not working. And you go, for instance, to GitHub, you see there are like 500 open issues and nobody is replying. It's like, oh, this is a Google product, but it seems they don't have time or vocation to provide support to those people that are asking for support. And then I ended up giving up on Polymer and ended up falling back, like many people, to Bootstrap, and so far it is working well. I don't have many issues, and if I have issues, you just search on Google, and often you fall in some Stack Overflow question that somebody replied to solve the issue that you found, and then you are done with it. You don't have much more to struggle to deal with this.
That's actually funny that you mentioned Bootstrap. Well, the problem with web components are that, listeners who don't remember what web components are, it's basically a way to create a custom HTML tag that would do something that you decided to do. And they are available for, I don't know, like 3-4 years already, and nobody basically uses them. I think the only popular example that everyone is presenting is GitHub time component that they used to show time or something like that. And there are nobody.
It's not very useful.
Yeah, and I think the libraries like Polymer are built upon the components and present lots of stuff upon it, but nobody is actually using the native component stuff to build something new. And what this article actually proposed in the end is to take the Bootstrap and replace our Bootstrap components with web components. And that would start a web component era that everybody would be building for extending the Bootstrap stuff like that. So basically what they want to do is take the Bootstrap that you just said work normally and try to make it worse, probably.
Yeah, that's a funny comment because I think it is yet another attempt of Google trying to define how we create user interfaces based on the web. In the past, they tried Java Web Toolkit. Well, I don't even remember what was the name they gave it. And basically, we program your user interface in Java, and then it would spit HTML and JavaScript. That's fine, except we don't use Java. And now this one is to use web components. I thought it was interesting because it introduces some quite nice behaviors that make user interface more usable. But when you face the real world, when you want support, there is nobody there. Yeah. Or there is somebody that probably doesn't have a clue what is your problem.
You as a JS classes admin, do you know how, if there are at least any classes that are web components actually, or something like that?
I think none. It's not that JS classes is big, but none. But there is a package that tried to emulate the ripple effect, as we comment, material design component, polymer, whatever it's the right name. So it emulated it, but it doesn't use material design. It's just emulation of a visual effect. So okay. That's how far
we are.
No. So probably the opinion here, components are endangered species, is probably accurate. Well, never mind. Probably I'm not relying on them because I need to have control over my projects. If they are not working, it should be my fault, but I should be able to determine why, and they are not allowing me, at least the Polymer implementation. Anyway, moving on to the next topic on which we are going to talk, just a very simple advice that I agree and I have tried using the past, and then it got confusing and stopped using it.
And
which
I
is
not agree.
Personally, I don't use. I tried to use it several times, but then but this won't work in this case, which is the use of the OR operator to get default values for functions. So if you don't pass a value to a function, a parameter, it will become indefinite. And if you put the value, I mean the parameter name or some other value, if it is indefinite, the whole expression evaluate to this value, which should be taken as a default. I think it is interesting, but as the guy says in the article, this is not very readable. Well, not very readable for those that never tried it before, but the idea is to pay attention, because if you have values like zero or false or an empty string, they evaluate to false. So even if you pass those values, they are taken as if you did not pass them there. Then that's the reason why it does not recommend to use this.
Yeah, well, that's all correct, but I know I'm still kind of like all the shorthanded versions. You could write code shorter and try to use it. Helps me to write code faster, and I think it's understandable. Yes, there are situations where it won't work as you expected, but there are cases where when you can use it normally, and most probably I usually use it for enumeration types, like when I have enumerated sets of values and I know that no one would validate of them as false, then I could use this operator to send the default value. Since ECMAScript 2015, we should be able to provide default values in the function definition, so it should not be a problem. So.
Well, but you are not using ECMAScript 6 anyway?
Not yet.
Yeah, we use Babel. more clever.
No, I think it would be easier with Node.js rather than with browser JavaScript, because it probably just will be a specific Node.js version which will start supporting ECMAScript. And it should,
right, you have more control.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, anyway, moving on to the next topic on which we want to talk about the library that I didn't know, called Vorlon.js, which should enable you to debug JavaScript remotely. I didn't know about this. Arthur, did you know about this library, Vorlon.js?
No, actually, I remember quite recently, or not that recently, maybe half a year ago, I needed to debug a specific JavaScript code onto the mobile device. It was not working in Android standard browser, for example, and it was so hard to do that, and I could not find any good library that would help me with it. With Apple tool, with Apple devices, it is easier because you can debug it from Safari on Mac, but with Android, it was quite impossible. So if I would have known about it, or maybe it was not yet released then, that it should help with this stuff a lot. And it's really annoying to debug specific stuff that does not work on mobile phones, for example. So
yeah.
The way I see it is, as it works, I didn't try it, but just from skimming through the article, then it's a Node.js server that uses Socket.io to connect to server from, basically you include the Vorlon.js script in your website and it connects to your local server, and through that connection you can debug, inspect elements, and see console output just like in your browser.
Yeah,
and it seems to be easy to set up, and if it works that as I described, then it's really great.
And this could also work to debug Cordova projects. I tried to debug them with the Android tools that Google provides, and that was simply a no-go. I could not figure what I was doing. Anyway, to make this work, you need to change your code, but it's probably just one line. You probably do it this once, and then there you go.
Or you have a development version and production version, and you just automatically include it in development version, stuff like that.
Yeah, that's it. Well, I think this deserves more time to take a look. So, moving on to the next topic, on which we are going to comment about, let me scroll here and put it in place, about something that I'm sure all JavaScript developers have went through, which is to make up your mind on what libraries are you going to use? Are you going to use frameworks, existing frameworks? Are you going to write it all from the scratch and deal with it? Or are you going to pick one of many libraries? And this is really annoying, because now that everybody and his mother wants to develop their own framework, there are many frameworks, and many of them are very popular, and when you look at it, you don't know which one you should which one you should use for each case that you want to deal. So in this article that the author comes from overcoming the framework fatigue, he gives some advice, like telling people that, well, things will change, so you have to keep up with things that change. So,
and hopefully we help you to keep up with things that change and new stuff.
Yeah, you just listen to the podcast and become even more confused and what to use. We're just giving here our opinions, but there are millions out there that have their own opinions. And basically, you have to keep up with the things that you may use or not and decide for yourself. And also another comment is that he says that just because some library seems to be an alternative to another library, it doesn't mean that one of them is necessarily better. Everyone has value. And,
like Angular and Backbone, for example.
Yeah, don't tell me about those because I didn't even bother to study them.
Oh, really? Yeah. No, they're actually quite great when you get to know them.
Yeah, well, I for now, I am still in that phase that I decided that, well, I'm going to do most things on my own, so I have control. But probably I'll regret it later, but that's another story.
Says the guy who owns the JS classes website of reusable components.
Yeah. But at least I use Bootstrap, and Bootstrap uses jQuery, so we ended up falling to the jQuery benefits or trap or whatever you want to call it, good or bad.
There are alternatives to jQuery, like Prototype, for example. Yeah, there are also alternatives, true.
Oh, there are several alternatives, but Zepto and others. But it's a struggle, and well, let's deal with one project at a time. Probably you use some library in one project, and the future project you will say, oh, no, I'm going to use something else.
Yeah.
Okay, and moving on to another topic, this is more about Node.js. It is interesting because it somehow teaches how to get over.
How to make Node.js better than PHP.
I don't know if it will be better, or at least make it look work the same, because the idea here is to create a cluster. Processes to deal with simultaneous requests and then do not rely on asynchronous I/O to deal with the problems of that could eventually come up. Like, for instance, you do some intensive processing on one request and probably will delay all the other requests. So the idea is to have a cluster. So this is a built-in Node.js module, right?
Well, yeah, it's a core module that is comes together with any Node.js installation. And the basic idea, the usual usage is to spawn so many processes so many processes as there are CPUs in your server. So each CPU would handle a single process, so it could handle a separate request separately.
Yeah.
So you can fork them, you can trace them, you can see if any of them stopped, so you can refork them again, like due to an error or something like that. You can message between them if needed. But there are some downsides to it too. For example, they would have separated global scope. So if you would want to have some shared configurations, shared values between them, you would have to store it either in the file or in database or something like that. So it's all something that you need to anticipate when working with multiple processes. But all in all, I think that's a standard procedure for all the Node.js services I see. Is to spawn its own processors as much as there are CPUs,
yeah.
And thus handle much bigger
volume. Yeah. I don't know if that logic is very good, because just because you have as many processors as CPUs, it doesn't mean that all CPUs will always be available to Node.js, because there are other things running on the machine.
Yeah, if it's your server, then there are not much of additional thing running. But yeah, it's actually true what you said, because on some recommendations I read that you need to spawn one less process than you have CPU, so the master cluster would use the one process and other spawners would use the other CPUs.
Yeah.
It would scale more eventually and not have a master cluster and another process on the same CPU, which
probably. And you also have to take in account that each process will take its own memory space. And if you if you create more processes than you have in RAM, it will start using the swap and it will slow down. So also I have to be careful with that.
There is actually a limit of, I think, what was that? One process, not just process, can take up to 1 gigabyte or 2 gigabytes of...
Yeah, but it's not like every request will take 1 gigabyte of RAM.
Yeah, but it's just per process, so it can't use more than that. So if you have like 4 processes and 8 gigabytes of RAM, you should be...
Yeah, because each process will deal with more than one simultaneous request. Because it's all asynchronous, and while one is serving the file, the other can be processing the next request. And it's all in the same process. But okay, this is an interesting topic, but it's not a trivial one to understand all the nuances. But there is this nice article here that gives you some ideas to things that you should be concerned. So moving on to the next topic, we're going to talk about the problem of the installers. Shall we use Bower or shall we use NPM? Well, last time I did this, I used NPM to install Bower.
Yeah.
And then used Bower to install everything else.
Well,
except maybe a fourth, a few things.
Only client side JavaScript. Right?
Well, yes, that's what a client side, including Cordova projects, that you can also think of client side because all the code runs on one side. If you can call it the client, well, a mobile device is still a client. The idea of this article is to stick to everything on NPM. Probably it would be a good solution if everybody followed it, right? Because sometimes you go to a site, let's say a tutorial about Bootstrap, and you take a look at, oh, we use Bower to install it. And then you realize that you need
install NPM to install Bower.
Yeah. Well, that's always the case. But from then on, which one are you going to install what? Well, Bower is typically for client side projects, and NPM is typically for Node.js projects. And even regardless if you can call them server side or browser side. So this article was telling you that you can run both, but ideally you'd use NPM alone. Well,
since I think they announced a beta of the NPM 3 release, and as far as I understand that it would also support installing client-side browsers, so it would like replace Bower's functionality, but it's still in beta and didn't try. Don't know how it works. Because well, when comparing to current situation where you could use NPM and Bower, then Bower installs it in different directory that you could automatically make public available from the browser side, so you could include those JavaScript, and it could be handy, but if NPM would put all of them in single directory, it again would be a mess to understand which is meant for client side, which is meant for server side, and how it all ties up together.
Like the previous article said, you have to evaluate one project at a time and then you decide which one. Now we're going to talk about one last topic about this thing that is being published recently, which is an article on the JSINT site telling which version of the ECMAScript they will support or not. And because there are people that they want them to support the more recent versions, so it seems ECMAScript 6 was renamed ECMAScript 2015, and the position that they announced in this project, I mean in this article, is to only support language extensions that are at least at stage 2 of the TC39's standardization process. From what I got from this is like saying the specification should be in a mature level. So they are not going to check the types of the code, everything else in your code, if the at the level of the language that is not yet mature, because it probably can change. And well, that's basically what they are saying here. And personally, I agree. What do you think, Carter?
Yeah, no, that's one of the things that being mature. Other thing that JS Hint is an open source project, and with new ECMAScript changes, there are lots of things which breaks the JavaScript syntax as it is, new keywords, new ways to define functions. And I think it would be really hard to implement them in JS Hint as it is now. And doing it just so it might change later again would be really a waste of time of the developers who are working for free for open source projects.
Right, right. Today should focus on a stable target, not something, oh, it's going to change next week.
Yeah.
Okay.
It would be actually cool if a JS Hint would have a plugins to do something like that, but also as I described in this blog post, then it's really hard to implement in this state of JS Hint with the plugin.
Right. Probably very complex. Well, we did see practically in the reached a section of the podcast on which we would comment on the innovation award nominees and rankings. And if you are seeing this, it's because there was a problem with Google that didn't allow us to download and edit the video to so we can assemble parts of what we already mentioned in the Pitch Picasso's podcast that also covers the Innovation Award winners of the JavaScript world. So if you are seeing this, it's because Google did not fix the bug that prevented us to download and edit the video and create a new one.
Just
so,
HP.
Yeah, exactly. You need to go and check what you said in the other podcast that would be published in the PHP process site, because it's basically what, part, at least part what we've said. And and if you are actually seeing this, it's because this is the original recording, not the edited one, and you need to go to see the other recording, because until so far Google did not fix the problem. And we don't know if by the time we publish this, the problem will be fixed so we can edit the videos. So with this, practically this podcast, many topics we covered today, very interesting ones. And well, on my behalf, that is all for now. Bye.
Bye.